On this edition of the Taking a Walk series, we're in the historic Roxbury section of Boston. Lush history in the inner city, and I'm here to learn about this area from a new friend. His name is Topper Carew, an amazing resume as a film director and producer. He's got great stories to tell on the Taking a Walk series. He's also a principal investigator at the MIT lab. I'm so excited to learn about this area of Lower Roxbury and to be taking a walk with Topper Carew.
Taking a Walk with Buzz Knight.
Well, Topper, it's so great to be taking a walk with you here today in Lower Roxbury. You know, for me, one of the great joys of the Taking a Walk series is meeting new friends, but also learning about areas that maybe I don't really feel like I'm as educated about. So I'm looking forward to taking a walk with you. It's so nice to meet you.
It's very nice to meet you, and thank you for taking this time. I'd like to start with 14 Windsor Street. That's the place of my original home. And as I said, it was the apartment building in which my grandmother lived, and where I lived with my mother and her from birth through about the fifth or sixth grade. Now, that apartment building unto itself has an interesting story. It was four stories, and everybody knew everybody. I had even been at three fires in that apartment building. The most hilarious, if you can think of fire as hilarious, was a fire in the basement that had been started by a homeless person who at 5 o'clock every day used to cook pork chops. And you would smell the aroma of that food coming up through the hallway, and we nicknamed him Pork Chop. Well, one day the frying pan caught on fire, and it caught his mattress on fire, and unfortunately, Pork Chop got evicted. Now, this
I could smell pork chops right now.
You
could
smell
Robert.
Pork chops. You know, it's I love food. And so, you know, everybody in that building loved food, and he obviously loved food as well. So, directly across from 14 Windsor, which is now no longer there, it's a street over from the Melnia Cass Boulevard, which was originally an urban renewal project. So the whole neighborhood just got kind of wiped out, and it's no longer there. But I drive through it all the time. Sometimes I walk through it because it has so many memories for me. Now, ironically, it is right across from what was once the Robert Good Shaw neighborhood house. And the irony is, I am presently making a film about the restoration of the Robert Good Shaw Memorial, which is downtown and across from the State House. And what people should know is that's one of the 10 most popular and most visited monuments in the United States.
Wow.
And so it's been restored. And the history of that is the Robert Good Shaw Brigade was the first black brigade to fight in the Civil War. These were freedmen and formerly enslaved men who came together under the aegis of Robert Good Shaw, who was white and an aristocrat, a Boston aristocrat, and they built a brigade of the 54th Regiment, and they participated in the Civil War struggle. That neighborhood house is where I went to nursery school.
Wow.
It's where I went to an after-school program, and it is the place where I, in fact, did my one and only stage appearance as Tiny Tim in The Christmas Carol. I think from
what,
that point
one on, and only? Come
I'm
on.
I'm a one and only.
We're on stage now.
Yeah, we're on stage now. But I will tell you that when I was a little boy, you know, and, you know, my mother had me when she was 18, and my father got killed in the war. So, you know, my mother would be out and about, and I would ask my grandmother if I could come and get in her bed with her. And it is the birthplace, Windsor Street, is the birthplace of my writing interest, my writing connectivity, my storytelling, which has been the spine of my entire professional career. And this is how it used to work. I would say, Nana, can I come and get in bed with you? And my grandmother had the biggest, fluffiest sheets, the softest pillows, the great covers, and I would get in bed with her and look across at the nursery school at the Shaw House, and I would say, Nana, and I would tell her a story, and she would just go, mm-hmm. Now, she was asleep. She was hearing me. And I'd say, and then, and she'd say, mm-hmm. And so that was her greatest response, but that was the birth of my storytelling. So now let's go down to the corner where Shawmut and Windsor intersect. Right there was the 12th Baptist Church. That is the church where Dr. Martin Luther King launched his ministerial career. It was pastored by Reverend Hester, and but that's where he learned to preach. Wow. Right at the he was at Boston University as a divinity student, but he would come here to do his initial pastoral work, and that church is now up on Warren Street, but the original 12th Baptist Church was right there.
Unbelievable.
Okay, wow. Now. By the way, I should mention that Reverend Michael Haynes, who was this great monument to him built in Roxbury, was the director of the Robert Good Shaw House, and Mr. Shelburne, who was the first black graduate of Dartmouth College, was the athletic director. So there's right there at that corner, there's an abundance of history. In fact, right next door to 14 Windsor at 16 were the Guscotts, and Ken Guscott built the tallest skyscraper in his day in downtown Boston. So that little hub right there was a very rich contributor to Boston and American history. So,
Topper, I have a question about your grandmother.
Yeah.
And this was an appropriate time to stop and ask it.
Yeah.
Did she ultimately know that you would continue to have this career as a storyteller and or not? And what would she be thinking now?
Well, first of all, none of us knew, including me. But my grandmother would be very proud of me. And I can tell you that the apartment was the launch pad for so many tributaries of my family. And it would go like this. So my mother and I slept in one room, she was in another room. When my aunt, uncle, and their two children came, they slept in one room, and three children. The girl slept with my grandmother and I slept in the den. By that time my mother had moved on, she had remarried. It was a launch pad. It was, you know, it became, and what was so interesting about life in Lower Roxbury was you never had to lock your door. And there was one bathroom with seven or eight people, and it never felt too small. Okay?
Think about that now.
Yeah, think about that. It never felt too small.
Yeah.
And in Lower Roxbury, everybody knew everybody. If I was in another part of Lower Roxbury, someone would throw up a window and say, Topper, does your mother know you're over here? And I better say yes, because if I said no, the answer would be, you go home right now. Okay. Now, right there, right on the corner of Windsor and Shawmut, on one corner was a variety store that was owned by a Chinese entrepreneur named Shorty. Now, what would we do? We would go to that store, we would buy penny candy, you get a little brown bag, you'd have a dime, and you could almost fill that entire bag. There was a Coke like machine, it was like an ice box with a block of ice when Coca-Cola's used to come in glass bottles, You could get one for a nickel. You could get a pickle for a nickel, or you could get a hard shell crab for a nickel.
Pickle for a nickel. I like the way that rolls.
Pickle for a nickel.
Sounds like a song.
It is a song. I mean, you know, it was a delight to be a young kid with a dime to go into a store where a dime could buy you, you know, a whole delight.
Joy.
In a little brown bag.
Yeah.
You know?
Amazing.
Okay, so on the opposite corner, or I should say this, that it became to be a store owned by Mr. Williams, who continued that tradition, but he also had another very powerful tradition. That's where you would put in your policy numbers, you know, and play the numbers.
Ooh.
So sometimes I used to have to go down there with a dime wrapped in a little piece of paper with the number on it. You know, the numbers were based on the last three digits of the treasury balance on that day, and they always appeared on the back of the Record American, and you could win money. So it was basically gambling.
But you call it the policy numbers.
Yeah, that's what they.
Yeah.
That's the numbers.
It was in that cartoon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
And so now on the opposite corner,
was it really in the cartoon, or was that like, you know,
well,
was that just a tale? I grew up, which is in Connecticut, I remember reading the New York papers and my mother telling me exactly the fact that, look at that cartoon, I think it was called Ching Chong or something like that. And there's the number in there to play.
Oh, yeah.
So that was
true. Oh, yeah. It was the numbers, man.
Okay.
It's a big deal.
Wow.
It's a big deal.
See, now, we are under no duress thinking there's some crime we committed back then.
No.
And we're worldwide with this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Proper, so everybody now knows.
Yeah, well this was pre-lottery.
That's right.
This was the lottery.
That's right.
You know, and you could play for a dime.
Yep.
You could play for a nickel.
Go back in.
You could play for a penny.
Go back into playing the number as you
walk. So I would take it down. I would take.
Love
I would.
This.
My grandmother would wrap it up, a coin with on a piece of paper. The number was written on the piece of paper, and I'd run down to the store and say, "Okay, this is my grandmother's."
Love it.
Right.
Yep.
Right. Okay. So on the opposite corner of Windsor and Shawmut, right across from the church, was Dolly's Market. Now, Dolly Bolt had the meat market, and Dolly looked like a Buddha. He wore a white jacket, he wore a white apron, and everybody knew Dolly. And people used to hang out in front of the store. And it was, he lived in the Lenox Street Projects, which are a bit of a ways down Shawmut Avenue, which was, by the way, the place where GI families, middle class, aspiring to be middle class, would come back from the war, were living. And we used to go to parties in there. I mean, we used to play in there. And it was very respectable.
Which war? I'm sorry.
Second World War.
Yeah, that's okay.
Second World War.
Yeah.
Okay, so now, continuing down Shawmut Ave, we're getting to Hammond and Shawmut. On the corner of Hammond and Shawmut was Ma Dixon's. It was a soul food home cooking restaurant, you know, with secondhand furniture, but with firsthand food.
Oh.
I mean, you could get all the stuff. And she was like this legendary neighborhood cook. And you would go in there and you would get traditional Southern food.
Oh, man.
You know, and I mean, it was just absolutely delicious. And then, as we continue to walk and look, about three doors down from Ma Dixon's was John's Chop Suey. Now, John's was, you know, at the basement level. You'd go in, you couldn't sit, you just order. What could you get? You could get a 10-cent bag of French fries in a brown bag. You could get a 15-cent, you could get a 20-cent. You could go up in nickel increments all the way to a dollar. And then you could get a chow mein sandwich or a chop suey sandwich on a hamburger bun for a dime. So with a 10-cent bag of French fries, with a 10-cent chow mein sandwich, and with a Coca-Cola, after you finish that, you would feel like you didn't need to eat for a week. So
now, by the way, would you be in agreement that there are no longer great French fries anymore? That it's just, that's a lost art?
They're very hard to find. Oh. The best French fry place I've found is in Portland, Maine, where they double cook them in duck fat.
Ooh.
And it's called duck fat.
Oh.
And they are unbelievable. And when I first started going there, it was just a storefront. Now it's a sidewalk restaurant because people know those French fries. Those French fries are legendary. I have not found a French fry in Boston to match it, and I'm a French fry connoisseur.
Topper, I'm sensing a spinoff on the Taking a Walk series where we go off and eat at restaurants and,
oh,
and partake.
Oh,
anyway,
man.
Sorry to take you off topic.
Because I'm a foodie, man.
Oh.
Okay, so now let's continue our walk and let's go up Hammond Street, which is the street parallel to Windsor. We're coming to the Asa Gray School. That's where I went to kindergarten and first grade. My teachers, Miss Kramer and Miss Day, you know, and right across from the school was another penny store place. So after school, you go in, and if you may remember, you could buy these strips of paper that had these like little dots on them.
Sure.
And you know,
dots.
You go in there for 2 cents, you get a strip of those dots, and you kind of bite them off of the paper.
Yeah.
And you know, and you probably remember, you know, there were Hunt's potato chips, Wise potato chips, and this was another store where you could buy pickles.
I'm going to my knees, Topper, when you're mentioning the chips.
Oh, man.
You're getting me on the chips.
On the chips. The chips were fabulous. You know, these potato chips today are nothing like those potato chips that we had.
You're speaking my language.
You know what I mean?
Oh,
they're nothing like it.
Oh, I dropped to my knees, literally. Anyway.
So as we continue down Hammond Street, on past the Asa Gray School, we come to Tremont Street. On the corner of Tremont and Hammond is a restaurant called Slade's. Now, what's so interesting about Lower Roxbury when I was growing up, on Tremont Street we had parades, we had three pharmacies, we had a dentist, we had two law firms, but we also had Slade's, which was a chicken specialty place where when you look in the window, you see the chefs working on the rotisserie. The chefs are dressed in white chef uniforms and they have red hats on, those tall red hats, and people would come from the suburbs because it was such a divine restaurant experience, and there was no fear of white suburbanites coming to Slade's. There was absolutely no fear. And then when you go further down Tremont Street, there was Estelle's, which was a nightclub, a fine nightclub. And now I know about those places when I was young because I used to hang out with my mother, and I would sit on the bar stool and I would get a cup of tea and she would get a highball in both of those places.
Yep.
So I came to know people who worked in those places. And then if you go a little farther down and you get to Mass and Columbus, there was a nightclub called the Hi-Hat. Miles Davis, Ella Fitzgerald, Sarah Vaughan, Oscar Peterson, they all used to come there and perform.
Did you go and there with your mother?
I never. See, I was too young because then you had to be 21 to go in.
Yeah, yeah.
So I couldn't go in.
Wow.
But if you continue down Hammond Street, down Davenport, you come to the Columbus Ballpark, which is a place that all of the sports teams used to play, the local sports teams.
Yep.
But it was also a place where I would go with my paternal grandmother, and we would pick dandelion greens.
Wow.
And we would take them home to her house, and we would cook them and eat them like they were a delicacy. But if you continued past the park and you go over the bridge that goes over the train tracks, you're now suddenly on the other side of the tracks. And so my maternal grandmother from Windsor Street thought that there was a life for me beyond Windsor Street.
Yeah.
Yep. So when it came time to go to the fourth grade, because my paternal grandparents lived near an area called Brigham Circle, they felt that that would be a better school situation for me. So myself and two of my cousins were the first black students in a school called the Farragut, which was a working class white school. And I can tell you that in the fifth grade and the sixth grade, I got black eyes because we integrated that school.
Yeah.
But the other part of that experience, that over the bridge experience, that's why that bridge is so important to me. That's right off of Columbus Ave and goes across the tracks right behind the New England Conservatory of Music, because my grandmother took me to the Pops. They used to have a black night at the Pops, because in that day and time, the Pops was still segregated. So they had a black night, and there's a picture of me in an old Ebony magazine, which is floating around the family somewhere, where I'm a little boy reaching up to hold my grandmother's hand. I have on a white short pants suit and white shoes and white knee socks, and it says, Topper attends the Black Night of the Pops with his grandmother. So she was beginning to open up experiences for me.
Yeah.
And then she would take me to Brigham's. There was a Brigham's on Huntington Avenue, and that was like a treat. You're now getting the, you know, ice cream delicacy from a place called Brigham's. And then later in life, when I was a student at Boston Technical High School, when I used to play hooky from high school, I would go to the Uptown Theater. And I should have known that what I didn't know, and what I didn't know, that is I would eventually end up in the film and television business as a writer. But I used to love the movies. And in high school, I only really loved two subjects, track and lunch. And there was nobody telling me that there was a bigger world out there until a man named John O'Brien, who came to Boston Technical as a guidance counselor. The first guidance counselor told me, also, he was named O'Brien. The black one was named O'Brien. The first one told me, when I said I wanted to go to college and wanted to go to Harvard, he said, I think you'd be better off going to the Navy Yard and be a sheet metal worker.
Oh, my God.
Okay?
Jeez.
And so my grandfather had always said to me, you're going to be somebody. But what are you going to be? And he taught me so much. You know, we read Popular Mechanics, Popular Electronics. We read the encyclopedia. He wouldn't allow me to buy toys. We had to make them. And so I had it, and he made me memorize the poem If by Rudyard Kipling. And so when this guidance counselor, the initial one, said to me, go to the Navy Yard, I'm thinking, I got another drum that I'm marching to. So as God would have it, 3 weeks later, John O'Brien appeared. He said to me, what do you want to do? I want to go to college. I want to go to Harvard. He said, well, I don't know your grades, but I can get you in the other H, the black Harvard, Howard University. And he saw something in me that I couldn't see in myself. He said, you're a mystery to me. You're testing at the top of this test high school. You know, but your grades don't prove it. I said, I don't like it. I just don't like it. Nobody's saying to me, do this, do that. You can do this, or you can be more than you can be. And I, to this day, mentor his son.
Oh, that's beautiful.
I mentor his son.
And how old is his son?
His son, I'm not sure how old Richard is, but he runs an institute at Northeastern named after his father. So I spend a fair amount of time with him, and I was in a position to give John O'Brien, when he became the first elected school board chairman, I gave his first fundraiser.
I love it.
You know, so that's the circle.
Yeah.
That's the circle.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you give, you should receive. You know, and if you receive, you should give. So, you know, So I love Lower Roxbury. I think of myself as a son of Roxbury. You know, I think of that. And that's a very important thing it was a very important thing for my grandmother. You know, the principal motivation for me graduating from college was not the achievement unto itself, but to take my grandmothers, both of them, my aunt and my mother, in a limousine to Yale when I graduated, so they could see that.
Yes.
Because I was the first one on my maternal grandmother's side to go to college, to graduate from college. It was common experience for my father's family. And I should mention one last thing that I forgot to mention. The Shaw House, the Robert Goose Shaw House, yep, is also where my mother and father met. And that's where they started dating. And so that also becomes a very significant place in my life. And so this whole area that I've shared with you, I mean, I could go on. But, you know, I have in a myriad of ways managed to give back to that. And the biggest thing that I've taken away from my Roxbury experience is that love, family, friends, affirmation, cultural competency, and expectation are the things that helped me become who I am.
I'm stunned by your storytelling, first of all. I love your storytelling, and the essence of the Taking a Walk series is about storytelling, really, and about a particular location. You've had so many projects in your career. You're still active with your current project that you talked about earlier. Are there any particular projects that are your favorites, or are they all like children, and they're all favorites?
Well, let me say this to you. First of all, I am pleased that you would think of me as a person who you might invite into your experience. I appreciate that. Okay. I will talk about a project that is my most favorite project at the moment because, you know how it is being an artist. After you finish the painting, you lean it up against the wall, you know, and you move on. And, you know, I don't like to spend too much time dwelling on work that I've done in the past, even though, you know, there are people who say, oh, you did that. But here's the thing that I'm most excited about. I have a project that I'm sending up to the International Space Station, and it's called This Little Light of Mine. Okay, what is This Little Light of Mine? It will be a payload, and in that payload, which is going to the International Space Station, will be a film that I'm making about children singing This Little Light of Mine. This Little Light of Mine is a song that many people know. And the essence of what it will be will include messages of love, peace, and joy at a time in the world when we need that right now. Because the world in our nation has darkened, okay? So this film will be broadcast back to Earth. There will be a website, and on that website, this Little Light of Mine website, there will be a screen that will allow you to track where the International Space Station is at any particular moment in time, so you can go outside of your house, look up, and see it. There will be that light in the sky. It appears as the third brightest star in the sky.
Wow.
Okay? And then you'll come back, you'll go to your phone, you'll go to your pad, or you will go to your computer, and you will be able to see in real time the song being broadcast back to Earth as children sing it. It will circle the globe for a month and a half to 2 months.
Oh, that's outstanding.
Putting this message, sending this message back to Earth. This is totally philanthropic. It is not designed to make money.
Is this affiliated with your MIT work?
This is me.
That's you.
This
okay.
is me.
Oh, I love
it's
that.
A result of my MIT work. I was the Chinese wanted me to come to China to design a Mars colony. And I didn't, because China's too far. That trip is punishing, man.
Oh yeah.
You know, I've had the best way you could possibly travel, but it's just too long. And if I were younger, man, I might have you know, whether the trips, but at the same time, I don't want to give all those secrets to the Chinese community. You know, they I got some issues with their authoritarianism.
Yes.
And so even though my best friend in life has been Chinese, I got an issue with the way they handle things. So as a result of that, I met somebody who sends up payloads.
Wow.
And I mentioned it to him. He said, yeah, I would love that. So that's how it happened.
That's great.
Yeah, so it's going to go up. It's scheduled right now to go up on October 1st on an Elon Musk rocket.
Oh, God.
And so the engineers in Texas are working with me. The engineers in D.C. are working with me. And we can make this all happen.
What a great story. Thank you for sharing it. Thank you for sharing a delightful walk here in Lower Roxbury. I'm going to coin a phrase here by a new friend of mine that I know is a phrase. I have to let all of this conversation marinate.
Oh, man. Let me tell you about the word marination in my life. That was the one of the wisdoms that my maternal grandmother laid on me. And she would say to me whenever there was a decision that was deep, meaningful, or whatever, she would always say, well, let it marinate.
Love it.
I believe in that word. I'm glad you brought that up.
Well,
that's a powerful word.
Topper Carruth, thank you for taking a walk. I'm honored.
Hey, listen, man. As I said, I wanted to do this because this is the first time I've been able to tell this story about this aspect of my life.
It's beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. God bless.
Taking a Walk with Buzz Knight is available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.